This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at @itswilltime and at @BarnettJake. On today's show, reactions to New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 10 and the New Japan stars headed to WWE. So Jake, with all the news in wrestling this week really centering around New Japan, it's kind of crazy to think that we are just 2 days removed from New Japan Pro Wrestling's biggest show of the year, Wrestle Kingdom 10, on January 4th, 2015, at the Tokyo... 2016, my goodness, at the Tokyo Dome. And just as we start, I wanted to talk about that show because it was a really big show and I found it to be rather delightful. How did you feel about the Tokyo Dome show?
You know, I really enjoyed it. I think there were a lot of elements that, I guess, didn't quite live up to Wrestle Kingdom 9. The undercard specifically just didn't quite carry as much interest for me. I mean, I guess it was all the multi-man matches that ended up kind of piling up in the early part of the card. But I guess that's fairly typical for a dome show. They try to get everybody that they can on those. But I think the real focus of the show was on the final three matches, and I think all three of them delivered in a big way. I mean, I don't know if it quite lived up to Wrestle Kingdom 9, but I don't know that it necessarily had to. I mean, it still was just an amazing watch and an amazing contrast to what we get from, you know, big WWE shows where, you know, it's mostly about theatrics and pageantry, whereas New Japan, it's work rate all the time, and they delivered in such a huge way. And all three of those matches were so different in terms of the psychology and how they were worked. I was impressed by the show. I think I liked Wrestle Kingdom 9 a little bit more, though.
I'm with you there. I think Wrestle Kingdom 9 was a better overall show, and the greatness of Nakamura versus Ibushi really pushed Wrestle Kingdom 9 over the top as a truly classic show, because that match is still awesome. And I think almost the low-key greatness of that Okada and Tanahashi match from Wrestle Kingdom 9 also shines through when you go back and watch it. Now, the undercard was a major issue for me on this show. I found the matches enjoyable, but way too laden with interference. With the opener, I thought, okay, well, Cody Hall's going to get involved for the Young Bucks. That's fine. But as it went on and every match had weapons used or some interference, it almost felt like I was watching a TNA pay-per-view there for a minute. I forgot what I was watching because other than the fact that I was up at 2 in the morning furiously typing up things on my laptop. By the way, I did live coverage on a show. I probably should have opened with that surprising bit of news because that was crazy. That's not a thing I do.
Yeah, it's more difficult than you would imagine. I mean, I'm sure people probably don't really care about the difficulties we have doing live coverage, but it's a process. Like,
yeah,
you don't imagine how much work it's going to be until you're like knee deep in it.
You run out of synonyms for the word hit. Also,
absolutely.
I was having serious issues, and then I was like, no one is reading this as a creative writing project. Will type up the damn match. Yeah. Yep.
No doubt.
But so you mentioned those top three matches, just three insanely different matches. Ishii versus Shibata was this hard-hitting, crazy match. They beat the tar out of each other in such a way that I was almost frightened at points, especially at the end when they started headbutting each other. That was brutal.
It just sounded so awful.
Like, yeah.
Oh, man, gross.
That was hard to watch. But the match itself was fun. It was a fun display of that strong style, that fighting spirit style, that hard-hitting, I want your best shot, you give me yours type of match that I think for a lot of people is synonymous with Japanese professional wrestling. You follow that up with Nakamura versus Styles, and you had a very different match with Nakamura versus Styles. You had something that was tentative in moments, something where each man seemed to be really wrestling their best match. They wanted to hit their best move. They wanted to do the best thing to each other. I was kind of blown away by the way they structured this match and the story of it, and thought it was really, really fun. I had a friend say it seemed like they were saying, I know you. We've never touched, but I know you so well. I know what your best move is going to be. It was like watching... sometimes when you watch football or another sport, you know, wow, that coach did a lot of tape study, and they know exactly what they need to do to beat this team. And it was like watching two guys who had done a lot of study, who knew what the other guy's match was, who knew what the other guy wanted to do, and found a way to break that routine. But each guy was so good that they couldn't fully break the routine. I thought Nakamura versus Styles was great. To me, it lived up to the dream match feel, and it was just fun. Like, it was a fun match all the way to the end with Nakamura hitting that final Bomae and the fist bump at the end. That was a great moment.
You know, I think it also benefited from the fact that these guys were, you know, having their first match together, at least on a major show. I don't know if they had wrestled each other previously. Was this their first encounter in New Japan, period, or were they on other shows in a match together that I'm unaware of?
I believe they were in a tag or two against each other before AJ went out with his back injury and left the World Tag League Tour. And I believe in another life for Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles many, many years ago, I think they may have had a match before. I saw some photos of it floating around on the Twitter. But this is the first time this incarnation of Shinsuke Nakamura has met AJ Styles, and it's their first high profile singles match, definitely.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And they seemed to have a level of instant chemistry, you know, that you would expect from veterans who, even though, you know, they probably hadn't planned out this match ahead of time, they knew each other so well from watching one another that, you know, they benefited from that. But there was also a sense of freshness in this match, being that we had never seen these guys in such a high-profile encounter before, that didn't really exist for the main event, which I think didn't necessarily suffer because it was technically a bad match by anyone's standards. In fact, I think it was, you know, incredibly well received as a technical masterpiece. But we had seen it so many times before that I think the memory of Nakamura and Styles will probably stick with people further into the year than Okada and Tanahashi will end up sticking with people.
Yeah, I believe the commentators, who we should touch on in a minute, actually, I'll touch on that now. How did you watch the show? Did you watch with the Japanese commentary or the English commentary?
I caught the show with the English commentary.
What did you think of the performances of Kevin Kelly, Matt Stryker, and Yoshitatsu?
I thought Yoshitatsu was given pretty much an impossible task. Like, I think he didn't really add a lot to the conversation. He was there to be mostly a translator, I think, of the Japanese language promos, and to kind of, offer some insight into what they were talking about in English. But I don't know if he was, you know, not as good of a translator on the fly as he thought he was, or what they were going for there. But I think that was a failed experiment, unless, you know, Yoshi gets much better and much more confident on, you know, in that announce booth. He'll need a lot of work to get to the point where people are going to want to hear from him again. I think Kevin Kelly was passable. I still don't think he's found his stride in New Japan yet. I think he's better in Ring of Honor. Even though, you know, I think it was probably slightly better than the effort Jim Ross gave a year ago. A lot of that was due to, I think, Kevin had done a little bit better preparation. And Stryker, I know he's gotten a ton of hate from people, and I think there's plenty to pick on with him. But I think with Stryker, you kind of know what you're getting into. And so while I was listening to it, it didn't stick out to me as being especially bad. It just stuck out to me as being very Stryker, and I just kind of know what to expect. So I wasn't a huge fan of the announce booth. I think they did a passable job. I think Stryker was better last year. He seemed to be a little bit more self-indulgent this time around, which is a problem that he has regularly. If you listen to him in Lucha Underground and even going back into his days in WWE, he still has yet to really put a filter on himself. He often says way too much. But for the most part, I think, you know, you have to give it like a C- for a letter grade.
Yeah, I would agree there. I found that Kevin Kelly was all right. Matt Stryker was Matt Stryker. But the weirdest thing to me on this, Kevin Kelly and Stryker in moments got into grooves. Like, it seemed like they got into the flow of the match. They picked up the rhythm and they were calling along with it. They figured out the song and were with it. And then one of them would interrupt to go, yes, but Yoshitatsu, you've had a neck injury. How do neck injuries work? And Yoshi would go, well, I mean, neck's injured sometimes. And I get better, wrestle. And I'm not making fun of his English here. That's literally just about what he was saying. And it was horrible. Like, Yoshitatsu on this was really, really bad. I thought the same thing as you, that he was there to translate. But the problem is, there weren't a ton of Japanese promos. There wasn't a lot for him to translate. I watched the whole pre-show in Japanese, and also watched Kevin Kelly, Matt Stryker, and Yoshitatsu form an air band with Hiroshi Tanahashi. That's something I'll never be able to forget. But Yoshitatsu just offered nothing. Like, his analysis was all, well, the wrestle sometimes.
So do you think Yoshi's English is a lot poorer than they thought it was? I'm trying to figure how they, I mean, they must have known going into it that, you know, he either lacked confidence or, you know, didn't have the English language skills to, you know, to be a fluid, you know, announcer. I'm not sure which one it is. I mean, I don't know, you know, Yoshi well enough to say one way or the other, but I mean, it seemed like the English that he did know, he enunciated well. So I have to believe it's just a lack of confidence, or, you know, he just wasn't sure what he was supposed to be doing.
I think it's a little bit of both. He wasn't sure how to announce. I mean, I've never heard of Yoshi announcing on a show before, so I kind of wondered if he had done this before, if this was kind of a way for New Japan to get Yoshi on the show. Hey, Yoshi's under contract. We know he's hurt right now. He can't wrestle. We want to get him a check for working Wrestle Kingdom. Let's get him on the show as the announcer. It seemed really odd, though. He detracted from elements of the show. But moving on from him, because it was a good show. I don't want to sound too overcritical. Tanahashi versus Okada was a classic. It was a damn classic. I'm convinced we're going to be talking about it for years. We're going to be talking about that moment when Okada still had hold of Tanahashi's hand and pulled him in, and when you knew that it was over. And we're going to be talking about the moment when Tanahashi lost in the Tokyo Dome to pass the torch to Okada, when Okada became the ace of New Japan. It was a big deal. You could feel that it was a big deal watching. The fans seemed ready for it and really excited for it from the very beginning. When the bell rang, they cheered. And that's not something I remember seeing at Wrestle Kingdom 9. I felt like with this one, they knew it was happening and they wanted it. The bell rang and they were behind Okada right away. What do you think of this match?
I mean, it was fantastic. I think they did everything that you could have expected them to do in terms of storytelling to finally get the point across that Okada was the man. I mean, they had callbacks to previous matches with some of the some of the sequences and some of the near falls. They built to that final moment, you know, perfectly. And the one criticism I have of the match, aside, you know, from, you know, everything else that was going on, was, I mean, it was 36 minutes long. I think, you know, maybe, you know, if you're a true fan of, you know, strong style and the Japanese wrestling, it, you know, it doesn't seem odd to see a match go 36 minutes, but I think it could have been trimmed up a little bit. I mean, maybe that's just me, but I think the one thing that the Nakamura and Styles match had on this one is that I think this one might have overstayed its welcome a little bit, and perhaps, you know, you disagree, but I think if they trimmed off a few minutes and they had gotten to, you know, and they had kind of trimmed up some of the middle of the match where it kind of dragged a bit, they could have told the same story and done it in a way that would have, you know, that would have perhaps gotten Okada, you know, a little bit bigger of a reaction, because they would have been able to keep up a better pace throughout the match.
I can see what you're saying, but, and the beginning was definitely pause heavy. It was definitely long, but It didn't really bother me. Maybe it's because I expected it. I expected this match to go over 30. Nothing else on this show did, so it didn't feel like it was overstaying its welcome. But what did you think of the finishing sequence? Just the absolute barrage of signature moves they gave each other. To me, there were moments where this felt a little bit like Rock versus Cena at WrestleMania 29. But the way Rock versus Cena saw WrestleMania 29 going in their heads when they thought about it, not the way it actually went. And that the barrage of finishers seemed brutal and effective, and the reversals were compelling. Everything was really high. It had a really high level of intensity where Rock versus Cena at WrestleMania 29, another torch passing title match, by the way, if you want to compare the two, I don't think it's completely unfair. Rock versus Cena at WrestleMania 29 was this weird, slow slog through signature moves.
Yeah, it reminded me of, like, if you had watched somebody, like, put a highlight reel together of their matches and you had, like, cut it together for, like, a 2-minute YouTube video. Like, they managed to pull that off in, like, the last couple of minutes of this match. Like, it really did feel like a highlight reel. And it was, you know, if there was any part of this match that felt like magic, I think it was that closing sequence. So that part of it was absolutely perfect for me.
Hey, everyone. Like what we do here? Want to help us keep producing great content? Check out ProWrestling.net membership. You obviously enjoy podcasts and insightful wrestling coverage. We have a metric cuss word ton of insight on the .net members side. Members get access to ad-free access to the site, exclusive audio shows, including our flagship .net Weekly, which often features bits of first-run news not available elsewhere, audio reviews of every major TV show, including Raw, SmackDown, Ring of Honor, TNA, Lucha Underground, and NXT, access to the .net members forum with a great group of people. All of this? You can get started with ProWrestling.net membership for as low as $5.50 a month. Also, if you would take the time, maybe you don't want to join right now, take the time to rate our podcasts on iTunes. Check us out there. Please give us a rating, honest criticism, whatever you want to do. It helps us, and we would really appreciate it. Thank you guys so much, and enjoy the rest of the show.
You mentioned the entrances earlier. Were you a little disappointed by the scaled back entrances this year? Because I was. Look, I wasn't expecting Shinsuke Nakamura with a bunch of strippers. I wasn't expecting Okada with a dinosaur this year. For whatever reason, I just didn't think they would be able to top that. But they, and those are Wrestle Kingdom 8 entrances, by the way. Okada really did have a dinosaur with him.
He did.
It was amazing.
It was.
But I was expecting something a little more. It seemed almost out of place to be in the Tokyo Dome and not have the giant theatrical entrances, but have relatively straightforward entrances, especially in these last two matches with Nakamura versus Styles and Okada versus Tanahashi. I wanted a little bit more out of these entrances, and I thought especially for Okada's, who probably had the best produced one of all of them with the money falling and everything, and maybe this was the technical glitch at the beginning of his entrance that happened that takes away from it a little, but I felt like his entrance was a little subdued compared to what I thought it would be in the match where he became the ace of New Japan.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm not sure if the sort of downgraded entrances were a result of like a budgeting issue or what happened. I can't imagine if they, you know, it was a lack of like technical aptitude. They pulled off these amazing entrances before, but I do know that I think it was announced that they only sold like 25,000 tickets to Wrestle Kingdom 10, which would have been something like 11 or 12,000 less than last year. So perhaps it was just a budget thing that they just had to trim some of the fat off of the entrances in order to pull a better profit margin. I don't know, but it was definitely was disappointing.
Yeah, it was. I'm not sure what the profit margin thing is there, but it was a little bit of a bummer to see the production subdued to that level. Something else that will affect New Japan's budget, maybe positively for them, but will also affect their shows a little bit negatively. It came out that before this show, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Doc Gallows, and Karl Anderson have reportedly given their notice to New Japan. They're on the way out. They're going to WWE. That's a report out there, at least. I know MLW Radio had it first. Dave Meltzer at the Wrestling Observer newsletter has confirmed it's out there through a lot of sources, including WWE's own website, commenting today on the rumors, tweeting and putting out there, are AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Gallows, and Anderson on the way to WWE? They had their website write a speculation article, for God's sakes. This is major, major wrestling news. This is absolutely massive, and we're going to talk about it for just a couple minutes because it does relate to this Wrestle Kingdom 10 show. Jake, Styles and Nakamura in WWE, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told me that a week ago, I would have thought you were insane. I mean, it seems like something that was so impossible for a guy like Nakamura, who just felt like a New Japan lifer. You know, I think, you know, with AJ, you could see, like, for convenience sake, you know, he doesn't have to do all the international flights, and he'd be close to family, especially if he spends any amount of time in Florida, you know, just before he hits the main roster. We don't really know where these guys are headed. I'm assuming, you know, just based on what's been floating out there, rumor-wise, that Styles and Nakamura commanded a salary that would make it difficult to believe that either of them would be headed straight to NXT. So it's a crazy exciting time. The Anderson and Gallows seem bound for NXT. I mean, it seems like Finn Balor has been posting frequently over the past couple of days, you know, some old photos of him and the Bullet Club. So, you know, perhaps we're going to see something like that for him in NXT with some of his buddies coming in. So I definitely see this as a huge positive development for WWE. It certainly has to, you know, cause some rifts over in New Japan. I mean, Nakamura especially, I know I was seeing posts on Reddit, from people who are translating some Japanese forums, and people over there seem absolutely devastated by Nakamura leaving. So who knows what will end up happening and how he'll be treated in WWE, but it seems like that one stood out to me as the one that seemed the least likely.
Yeah, well, it's the top three. It's a top three star of a company leaving. If that happened in WWE, it would be akin to not John Cena, but someone pretty high up leaving. I'm trying to think of who, like, the third
Randy one. Orton or,
yeah,
or one of those guys.
That's a great example. It would be like Randy Orton leaving. Everyone, American wrestling fans, I know people listening to this might be going, please send him to Japan. But that would be nuts. That would be insanity. And the idea of Nakamura coming to WWE, it excites me. I know a lot of people are a little nervous about it, and I'm more excited than nervous. I want to see Nakamura on that stage. I want to see him in person. I want to see him foster that relationship with American crowds that he seems so good at fostering, and I hope he's able to. I am really optimistic about this. I think Gallows and Anderson could be really fun in NXT and on the WWE main roster if they decide to go that direction. And Nakamura and Styles on the WWE main roster suddenly puts so many matches into play for WrestleMania and shows after. I will say Dave Meltzer at the Wrestling Observer newsletter is also reporting that Nakamura should be finishing up his dates. He will not be leaving right away, but it's likely he's the current New Japan Intercontinental Champion or IWGP Intercontinental Champion. So it's likely that he takes some time to finish up. AJ Styles seemed to be done the night after the Tokyo Dome at the New Japan New Year's Dash show. They're kind of raw after WrestleMania. AJ Styles was kicked out of the Bullet Club. He was beat up by Kenny Omega and by the Young Bucks to the extent that he was done at the very end. He bowed and the crowd cheered for him as he left. Also, it seems like Kenny Omega is the guy in line to get a title shot from Shinsuke Nakamura, because he did what doesn't happen often in New Japan, and he got a clean pinfall on Shinsuke Nakamura at that New Year's Dash show. So it looks like Omega, who has declared himself out of the juniors and intends to be a heavyweight now, will be fighting for, and I mean, I gotta say, likely getting that Intercontinental title. So this could work out well for everyone involved, because that sounds really fun to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some people in New Japan that are now, you know, in line for, you know, some bumps up, and that's not necessarily bad either. You know, Kenny Omega seems to be, you know, the first beneficiary of that, but it's not like New Japan is completely depleted. I mean, they do have an extremely talented roster full of guys, and I'm sure they'll be fine. And so I look forward to seeing, you know, how they recover from this and who else they, you know, they might bring in and who else they might move up. Because if there's one thing that New Japan seems to be good at, it's that they have a much better engine for star creation than WWE does right now.
Yeah. They've kind of had a caste system for a long time, and they've had a top four with Tanahashi, Okada, Nakamura, and Styles. And, well, two of the top four are leaving, so it looks like they have to make some room. Jake, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Thank you, everybody, for listening and for your support.
Thank you for listening to this ProWrestling.net podcast. For more, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, hit us up with a rating, and tell your friends. Also, please check out the goodness of ProWrestling.net membership. Bye!